Fine, splendid. There we are. I think it makes perfect sense now. We just to actually sort of update you, Ashok from Pets Life is supposedly on his way to the ISDN studio. We haven't actually managed to connect in any way, shape or form, so I'm going to actually use the engineer's mobile number to actually relate to that. This is very exciting in many ways, isn't it, Ed? It's the sort of thing that, you know, real broadcasting can be about.
It's live.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly, so it's live. Well, this is good. At least it's ringing, which is great there, so...
Matthew Jones.
Matthew, hello. It's Siren FM here. Now, we have tried to reach you via our G722 mobile system. We are live, I have to say. We couldn't do that. Is it possible to just use your mobile to get a little flavour of what's happening at Crufts today?
It's not a problem at all. Let me hand you over to my colleague Mike Chambers, who'll be able to speak to you.
Fantastic, Matthew. Absolute lifesaver there. And we'll actually go to Mike Chambers now. And Mike, good morning. Welcome to the Midweek Drive Morning Edition. How are you, sir? That assumes he actually is at the other end of the line, though, effectively.
I think he's very well. I can just sense it.
You're getting those...
I'm getting the vibes that all is well.
This is
the
very
phone
good.
Is kind of mid-air somewhere, I think, at the moment.
I think so, sort of in transit.
Yeah, in transit.
It's working
it's
down.
Still connected. There's a little bit of white noise there, isn't there?
When Alexander Graham...
Hello.
Hello. Hey. Is this Matthew Chambers?
No, this is Ashok.
Ashok, right, there we are, Ashok. When last we spoke, you were over in Middle America, Central America, and now here you are at Crufts. We had one or two challenges, but we just thought we'd have an opportunity to speak with you. What sort of things are there at the NEC in Birmingham? What kind of things can you see at present? Is it looking as good as ever?
It's looking better than ever. It's you know, the first day, there's just queues and queues of people. You know, by the end of 4 days, there'll be 25,000 dogs here. So, you know, it's very exciting. People are just milling around trying to get set up and everything. It's the Terrier and Hound Day today. And, yes, lots, you know, 4-6 major rings and lots of activity.
Fantastic. Now, we've been to the NEC Birmingham before. It's nice to see that this year, obviously, Crufts, it's open to the whole new classes coming through. And the notions that Crufts used to be very much for specialised breeders, although obviously it still is the part of the whole thing, but it's open to, shall we say, non-pure bred lines as well.
It is opening up. And yes, you know, I think that's a very good thing that they're doing. So... you know, it gives more people a chance to be here and show their dogs and everything. So
it's good news. And obviously you're there wearing the Pets Life banner, and we covered that over the Myathon, as Ed will remember, with joy and glee and delight when we spoke about Pets Life's fabulous sort of canine dental care. Ashok, obviously coming from the point of view of a chemist and an analyst from that point of view. Ed, any questions you'd like to put?
I do remember. How are they all looking this morning? Is there a great buzz around the place, all the dogs arriving so far?
Dogs, yes. Most of the dogs you see here are, you know, obviously the top of their class, and looking very, very exciting, and people are just, you know, you have to be here to feel the atmosphere, you know.
I'm kind of feeling it from here, actually.
We are. We're getting that canine. Stephanie, you're a keen canine fan. Questions, please.
Right. I am indeed. Have you got a favourite breed of dog yourself?
German Shepherds.
Very nice. Have you got one of those then, or...? Just like to watch them at the show.
I have a lot of friends and partners. My partners in Germany are all German Shepherd breeders, and they do shows and everything. And I've got three friends in America that have German Shepherds. And one day when I settle down and do less traveling, I might get one.
Well, this is it, Ashok. I mean, rather like myself, I just travel up and down from Teesside to Lincoln on a regular basis. You're going from Germany to London to Birmingham to Alabama to the Midwest. It's amazing, like global characters in all sorts of ways.
It is absolutely fun, you know, you know, the excitement really comes when you see people just come up to you and say, "Did you really make this product that works so well?" And at first, you just look at them and think, well, yes, I kind of did.
You're clearly a celebrity. You see, this is the whole thing. A celebrity reporter.
Well, a celebrity in my small little way, you know.
Now you're officially designated location reporter for Siren 107.3 FM and Southside Broadcasting. What greater acclaim can you reach?
I should have gotten in touch with you last week when I was at Global Pet Expo in Orlando. Well, you know, that was the biggest pet expo in America. And maybe we should do this every, you know. I'll be in Germany next week, but that's not for sure. But
I think we will talk, Ashok. We'll get a few things together on this particular routine, and we'll. I mean, what do you think, Ed? A kind of roving pet expo reporter in a global capacity?
I can see that.
Yeah. I think we're going to go with that. Stephanie, last two questions for Ashok, please.
Have you enjoyed your chat with us today?
Absolutely. It's such a delight. You know, totally, yes.
Good, and we'll hope to get in touch with you soon then.
Okay, thank you very much.
It's a genuine delight to actually have got through in the first place, really, with the sort of fun we've been having this morning. Amazing. Ashok, many thanks indeed. Take care. Enjoy the rest of the show. Of course, it's 7th to the 10th of March, so still a couple of days to come. I gather Minty will be hopefully getting back to peak fitness and should be making an appearance there somewhere along the line. So we will be represented. For the moment, keep on keeping on. And here's Bill Haley.
They call them Rhythm and Blue. Two dogs named Rhythm and Blue. Rompin' old Rhythm and Blue. Rockin' old red.
You see, personally, I'd like to see the Lincoln Choral Society do a version of Two Hound Dogs, as incarnated there by Bill Haley and the Comets. We, of course, welcome to the studio now for the first time since, of course, again, the Myathon. He was actually part of the Balegate Choir, doing fantastic things in every sense of the word. But today he's here to talk about the upcoming, not one, but two fantastic Requiem performances taking place at Lincoln Cathedral on the 16th of March. Of course, we're referring to Jeff Brown from the Lincoln Choral Society. Good morning, Jeff. How are you?
Good morning. To.
Excellent.
Alive and kicking, hopefully ready for what you can throw at me.
It'll be soft bowls to start off with, then once Stephanie starts on the sort of serious routines, who knows what could actually happen.
I'm suitably wary.
Well, it's very true from that point of view. The Requiem Mass in D minor by, obviously, Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart. It's got an interesting history because, obviously, it was completed by Franz Xaver Süssmayr because Mozart popped his clogs before he'd actually finished
it.
He did indeed. Salieri, we won't go into because that's a different line entirely. But that's the first thing. I think when we talk about the Mozart Requiem, those two things go together in an associative phrase. Don't necessarily think about Rutter's Requiem. Or maybe you do, because that's the other one that we're actually doing. John Rutter, of course, who also produced a fabulous Requiem. And this is the first time that not one, but two of these fabulous productions have been performed at Lincoln Cathedral. So why the decision after this gap to actually say, it's time we did a double Requiem, chaps?
Simply, well, it's 2001 since we last did the two together. And together they provide completely different artistic interpretations of the Requiem. To those who are familiar with the works of Mozart and of the Catholic Mass, his work was very typical of the fire and brimstone of the ancient positions.
Jeff,
of the
we've
church.
Said many a time, if you don't listen to the Midrick Drive Maud edition, you will be damned forevermore, and we try to put that forward, and same with the Midrick Drive. It's harsh, but we like to feel fair. Anyway, yes. So, yes, lots of Sturm.
Sturm und Drang.
Exactly, yes. Without Wagner, because obviously he was later, but still.
Oh, I love
Wagner. So lots of things from that point of view. And Rutter's take on the whole thing, was that, because obviously that's also based on an adaptation of the Roman Catholic Requiem Mass, is that slightly easier?
Up to a point, yes. Keep certain elements of it. But Rutter was really moved by the Fore Requiem, which is a great favourite of most choral singers everywhere. A much lighter weight approach and much more aimed at giving succour to the survivors, the mourners, the people left behind. And this is what comes over greatly in the Rutter work. It's a very gentle approach. And that is the principal difference. It takes on board, for example, a couple of psalms of the church, the sort of music that comes to mind for followers of the Anglican Church when they need comfort, consolation,
and of course,
hour of need.
Yeah, of course, the other thing is it's written in the 20th century, whereas, of course, Mozart's piece, Requiem Mass in D minor, written in the 18th century. So.
And he had, obviously, the use of modern orchestration and facilities and so on. And it's a very successful work in its own right.
got some mega stars taking part in this whole system, because we've got soprano Elizabeth Adams, currently a finalist at Durham University. We've also got Ruth Massey, of course, mezzo-soprano, yes, born in Nottinghamshire, educated at Worksop College and Cambridge University. I mean, other universities are available other than Lincoln. It's a bit of a shock, that, but still, never mind. Especially enjoyed the whole process.
Well, just a thought there. Music, perhaps.
And, of course, true. We've also got Andrew Morris, of course, a past member of the Cathedral Choir, who's also up with the whole... I mean, it's like a dream team of choristers you've actually got.
I'm very much hoping so, yes.
Yeah, I mean, it's the equivalent, Stephanie, of the old sort of rock band supergroup we've actually got. You know, all you need is Dame Kiri Tikanoa, and that's it. And probably she... You wouldn't want her these days in any case, from that perspective. She's too busy doing her stuff with Downton Abbey. Ed, wearing your musical hat, would you like to sort of take this interview a stage further, or shall we go to the Los Angeles Chorale with their interpretation of Agnus Dei?
I was going to just mention the Agnus Dei, actually. That particularly in the Rutter, it's the movements like the Agnus Dei, the more reflective ones, yes, as you say, mentioning comfort and consolation and all that. That Rutter really captures the art of beautiful subliminal melody, which sopranos in the choir, you know, adore. It's a magical piece of music, the Rutter Requiem.
It's delightful stuff to sing, so long as you can cope with the pages and pages of accidentals. It's quite scary music on first acquaintance, and it tests you to your mettle, despite the seeming simplicity of the oral result. Those who engage in this work need to know what they're about, and that makes it all the more joyful, really.
So does that mean that the Choral Society has found that more challenging to do the Rutter?
Oh, infinitely more.
Really?
So, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I suppose in a way, the old classical era of Mozart, people tend to say that the music sings itself. It's fairly predictable,
very
isn't
much
it?
So,
it,
yes. Yeah. Yes.
But the Rutter has, you know, you can turn a page and it goes off in an entirely different direction.
Mozart is like an old favourite coat that you put on that gives you great comfort right from the first bar. Mm. The Rutter, you're almost venturing into unknown territory to start with. And you yourself will know, the first time you're faced with a page full of accidentals on the bass or tenor line, well, it instills a certain fear, shall we say.
See, personally, I'd like to see Stockhausen do a Requiem, but that's a different line entirely. Okay, Los Angeles Chorale, a good friend, obviously, of the station and the show. It's time for them to actually go into their own interpretation of Agnus Dei. Lamb of God, for Latin scholars, of course.
Thank you.
the Los Angeles Master Carava with Bright's Mass with Canons and the Agnus Dei, Lamb of God, of course. Do you know, Ed, we actually had an invitation to go over to one of their recent performances, but so they had to turn them down. There's timings and details and all the rest of the bits and pieces. Still, what a shame. Life continues. Okay, moving on. We have Stephanie in the studio. We have, of course, Jeff Brown from the Lincoln Choral Society. Stephanie, choral singing, choirs...
Unfortunately, I am not musically gifted. I think that's one of those things that you're either born with as a talent as opposed to learning. I don't know, do you disagree with me there?
I think perhaps I would. I have the good example of my father, and my father was notably tone deaf. His chief exertions in the vocal line were renditions of old parlour songs, like that...
Come into the garden, Maud.
When Father papered the parlour. They used to sing that sort of thing in the bathroom. The problem was that you only ever got to know two lines, and it was only with the advent of Google and Wiki that you began to find out what the rest of it was all about. No, I got my musical interest from my mother. In fact, it sounds precocious, certainly, but I assure you it's true. I remember listening to Mozart at the age of 7 with pleasure, and I was a square from that point onwards. So I'm very one-sided.
Don't say you're a square just because you're listening to Mozart. I mean, please, we're not in the 60s, 1860s opposed to the 1960s. You know, we just work on that basis. Jeff, you're going to kindly stick with us because we're going up to a top filmic writer now whose latest movie is just about to actually hit the screens. That will be Arthur McKenzie. And, of course, a whole heap of other goodies happening as well. Ed, did you want to talk about the music festival just briefly whilst it's there? Because that was presumably why John Wenham summoned, I use that term deliberately, summoned you to actually see him recently.
And I dutifully obeyed and went.
Oh, there we are.
And came back
exactly.
In one piece.
Sorted.
Morning, John. And I can tell you that the Lincoln Music and Drama Festival 2013 is taking place at the moment in Didi. This week is the speech and drama focus. And next week, the 9th to the 15th, is the music focus of the festival, with a festival concert on the 22nd of March, and it all takes place, as ever, at the Central Methodist Church. That's on Lincoln's High Street. And it looks very, very exciting about the programme here. Lots and lots of people taking part this year. A really, really terrific festival. So I'm very much looking forward to popping down next week and chatting to some of the adjudicators, who are some top professional musicians.
Time, a few mistakes ago, I was in your sights. You got me alone. You found me. You found me. You found me. I guess you didn't care, and I guess I liked that. And when I fell hard, you took a step back. Without me. Without me. Without me. And he's long gone when he's next. Never been till you put me down. Oh, I knew you were trouble when you walked in. So shame on me now. Blew me to places I've never been. Pretends he doesn't know that he's the reason why you're drowning, you're drowning, you're drowning. Now I heard you moved on from whispers on the street. A new notch in your belt is all I'll ever be. And now I see, now I see, now I see. Oh, I knew you were trouble when you walked in. Trouble, trouble, trouble. I knew you were trouble when you.
Thank you, Taylor Swift. Amongst the desperation and fear growing in a crime-ridden sink estate in northern England, one man becomes involved into saving what little decency and community life exists. It's the winter of 1974. Power cuts and coal strikes cripple the country, which is reduced to a three-day working week alongside police centralisation. Everything, it seems, is falling apart along with the community's only hope and protector, the newly retired Detective Sergeant Arthur McKenzie. Oh, no, sorry, Barry Harrigan. How are you, Arthur?
I'm not too bad.
Now, what could
we? I couldn't have said it better myself.
There we are. I mean, I feel in so many ways, much as we appreciate Ian Lennox's weekly contributions to the Midweek Drive Morning Edition, somehow, as Ian himself has acknowledged, the master has returned. UK discus champion, detective chief inspector in your own way, and indeed top writer for crime plots, author of Cop on the Tyne, creator of a whole heap of other scenarios, including Five Joes and a Gym. Some of the Bill's best episodes came from your very plot lines, The Joys of Wycliffe, a whole heap of others. And now, the movie to be all movies, released this year, of course, Harrigan. Was that enough of a build-up for you, Arthur? I mean, for that? Sorted? Well, it's very true. So, I mean, we followed this through last year when we didn't quite manage to get a set visit because time was tight. And curious enough, I did visit Hartlepool a few months ago. Lord, it's looking devastating these days, but still. And I won't say that's devastatingly good or devastatingly bad, but suffice to say, they decided to dig up the central road, which was very confusing. But our friends in Radio Hartlepool, of course, are there and sure are doing wonderful stuff there. But you shot this in Hartlepool. Share with us in terms of why this tale of Detective Sergeant Barry Harrigan, who's left Hong Kong psychologically and physically battered, is an important movie for Stephanie Cox to check out, for Ed Wellman to visit, and indeed for Jeff Brown to bring the entire Lincoln Choral Society to the movies to actually see this adventure.
Well, I think it's important. I don't think is the right word. I think it's just interesting because it actually reflects what's happening today. So the wheel has turned completely 100 degrees, you know, 360 degrees, sorry. So what's happening then is actually starting to happen now. I mean, you've only got to look at the cuts that we're having, the fact that there's strikes, just a year or so ago there was these riots in the street, that the police are getting cut back, section stations are being closed. The changes are exactly the same as they were in the 70s. And therefore, the mood of the country in the 74, I see it as it is now.
That's really quite interesting, because you were obviously in the force at the height of the challenges of the 1980s, and I think you were sort of forced to deal with rioters and various other factors.
Yep.
You're arguing that, in essence, we've got some kind of bizarre admixture of Cameron and Clegg forming Mrs. Thatcher in some sort of bizarre sort of scenario here?
I mean, I think there's a chance of that. But, I mean, bear in mind, I joined the police force in 1955. So I cover a whole spectrum, you know, and I just see the patterns emerging, you know. Where people become disaffected, what happens is they start to get a voice. They're getting an even bigger voice now through the internet and mobile communications and all the rest of it. So things are happening a little bit quicker this time, I think.
I've just given Stephanie the joy of The 60s Man, of course, one of Ian Lennox's texts, which I think was one of his debut novels before he did The Brothers, and of course working on a whole heap of other scenarios. What advice would you give Stephanie, who has actually asked me, so is it a good book then? I said, I can't possibly comment on that. So she said, oh, I know what that means then. What sort of thoughts do you think Stephanie should be preparing for as she chooses to read through what I always refer to as basically Ian Lennox and Arthur McKenzie protégé?
Well, I think that it shows Ian's ability to actually describe things and to actually feed into that particular time. But also, I don't think it's his best book. I think The Brothers is his best book.
I'd agree.
I think that having read the book and having been through it with him and all its different stages, initially, like a lot of other writers, and like myself included, would tend to overwrite, you know. Yeah. And then it takes time to realise that what you do is you just tear it down and you just give them enough for to feed the imagination as opposed to tell them everything, you know. And I think The 60s Man is a good book because it covers a lot of information which was absolutely spot on. But I think that it just needed paring back a little bit more. The Brothers is a totally different book altogether. I think it's a terrific book. Yeah. I think it would make a terrific film, actually.
I would agree. Cinematic. I'll pass that on to Stephanie in good course. Did that actually help, Stephanie?
It did. I totally understand what you're saying with the information overload. I've just had a little read of the first page whilst we've had some songs playing.
She wasn't bored, Arthur. It's okay. She's not
bored. No, it's fascinating me. Like, I want to read on and find out because I've already seemed to have met three characters within the page, so... Yeah.
There we are.
Yeah, looking forward to it.
But enough of promotions for Ian Lennox, because he's in London now, so let's just move on from that. It's Arthur Mackenzie's time, and quite rightly so. Ed, any questions you'd like to put to Arthur about Harrigan and how it is a fabulous movie starring Stephen Tompkinson, amongst others?
Yeah, what did you learn yourself whilst writing this one?
Well, I started writing this 17 years ago.
Oh, good heavens, really?
Yeah.
Right.
What happened was I was working with a producer called Garrett Morris, and I was working on, I think it was Wycliffe at the time, and I was in London, and this is a chap who actually was involved in the producer and Zed Cars, Barlow at Large, Softy, I mean, a terrific producer, and he in fact had taken me under his wing, because he liked what I was writing, he liked what I was telling him, and he said, look, I'm looking for a new TV series, police series. He said, I think perhaps would you like to give it a go? So I went away and I wrote this script in a week, and it was really just a jotting of not ideas, but a structure was very, very loose, and about 35, 40 pages in a week. And what I did was I gave it to him, and we met in Covent Garden when I was going down to London, and he just threw this script on the table and we're having a coffee, and he said, that's terrific, that is the next police series.
Excellent. And then he died. Sorry, Arthur, I know I spoiled the routine there, but it's a bit like Mozart's Unfinished Symphony on that sort of basis. We were just talking about that earlier, really. You know, thank God you didn't die. Carry on.
Well, the thing is, what happened was, new producers come in, all the old producer stuff goes in the bin, but it didn't go in my bin, it went in my drawer. And it was until about 3 years, three or four years ago, I was with David Whittaker, who you've met, an actor, and we were reading the Sunday paper, and there was a big article in it by Alan Armstrong and the New Tricks team, saying that they were having great difficulty finding scripts.
And you had one in your drawer.
Well, exactly.
Yeah.
So he knew Alan Armstrong, and he had phoned him up and said, look, how do I get a script here? And he says, well, just send it to us. So I actually sent the script to him. I went away for a few days' holiday. I came back. It was an answer phone message for me, from Alan Armstrong, saying, this is a terrific script. This should be made. And he then tried to move it on to some producers. One or two liked it, but some of the others said this is a little bit dated. And he said, well, look, that's the reason it should be made. But he said, I can't do anything more for you. And I said, that's fine. But what happened was then I saw Vincent Woods, who was setting up Tall Tree Pictures, and we said, right, well, let's give it a go. And that's really where it all started. So if it hadn't been for a series of people, including Alan Armstrong, David Whittaker, there's no way that this would have ever seen the light of day.
And so what happens next? Could there be a Harrigan 2, or have you got other ideas?
Well, I've already mapped out a sort of... not mentally, but physically, a sort of prequel and a sequel to it, because everybody who's seen it, and it's a very small amount of people who have seen it, say this lends itself to be a TV series. I said, well, I'm not surprised.
Even I haven't actually had an invite to go and see it as yet. So, yes.
Well, if you had been available, you wouldn't.
Yes, you see. Arthur, it's always that availability. I don't know.
You will be there at the premiere, because we're looking to have it. It was only for cast and crew, really, people in the vicinity who had been involved in the film, you know what I mean?
That's okay.
And I invited a couple of police friends who had helped me, lent me police uniforms, helped me with some of the ideas and stuff like that. And I got a couple of solicitors who've helped me as well.
Always important to keep the solicitors on your side, I feel.
Well,
yeah,
exactly.
You like that.
What I wanted was an honest reflection from them as to what they felt, and they would tell me the truth. You know, it's not something that they wouldn't just say this is great because they're friends of mine. I actually would say the reverse, you know.
Indeed.
So, in fact, a bit like yourself.
Precisely. I'm just sort of thinking, I mean, obviously Stephanie needs any excuse to actually get out a new frock. So when can she actually come along to the premiere to actually sort of see this whole thing?
I think it's imminent. I haven't got a date. I'm involved with Vincent at the moment. We're looking to one or two places and speaking to one or two people. So it shouldn't be in the further distance future. So you know what I mean? It's imminent.
Are you up for a red carpet job then, Stephanie?
Oh, I hope they'll be rolling out the red carpet. Sashay down there, pretend I'm an actress,
Reporter for Midweek Drive, Morning Edition and Midweek Drive, Stephanie. Much more important. Very crucial.
No, because then I'll be on the edge of the carpet. I want to sashay
down. Yeah, in the northeast, love. What are you talking about? You know, it's a whole new one. I've got to ask the question, Arthur. Obviously, Barry Cannigan, based in Hong Kong. You spent time in Hong Kong. How much of this is autobiographical? I mean, that's the interesting line from that. I mean, is it?
Well, the Hong Kong stuff is limited, so it's only the fact that I was there, so I just used that as a device.
Right.
The rest of it, I would say there's about 40% of it autobiographical, maybe a little bit more. There's incidents that occur in the film that actually happened to me. One of them in particular, a seed situation, which is basically word for word. So there's a lot of me in it, but there's a lot of dramatic license as well.
We have Jeff Brown from the Lincoln Choral Society in the studio now. Jeff, siege situations and the Lincoln Choral Society. I can see some sort of mashup sort of thing coming up here. Jeff, have you got any questions you want to put to Arthur?
Yes. The thing that crosses my mind perpetually on occasions like this is the incessant march of technology leaving us behind. I regard myself as Stone Age man. I've only just acquired a mobile phone, for example.
I really it was pointless asking for an MP3 of the Lincoln Choral Society. It would have just created no end of problems.
Come again.
Yeah, exactly.
And I should think the big frightener for anybody who is writing, to my mind, is a sheer fear of being overtaken by the technology of the age, unless you are able firmly to set your novels, your writings, well in the known past. If you are sort of venturing into the future, are you treading delicate ground or unknown ground? Does it ever become a fear for you, Arthur?
Not at all. In fact, Stephen Tomlinson, the reason he wanted to do it was because it wasn't involved in mobile phones and computers and CSI and all the rest of it. It was because it's about people. At the end of the day, you write about people and our relationships. As far as fear of the future, I just make it up. It's my imagination. I just imagine what might happen.
Yeah. It's Christmas.
I'm the same as you. I have great difficulty dealing with mobiles. I have a very, very old mobile phone, which I'm speaking on now.
It's doing the business, Arthur. That's all we need. You know, it's working. Well, you should try our ISDN links with the Crufts Dog Show. A nightmare.
It's very much a question of staying in your comfort zone, Arthur, isn't it, with these things?
Well, exactly. Do what you know, people going on the internet and banking and all this business. No, I still keep it under the mattress.
I must admit, my ears pricked up when you mentioned Hong Kong. I had the good fortune to travel around the world a bit on business, and I stayed in Hong Kong twice on my way to China. And there's one place I'd love to go back to on holiday is Hong Kong, just to spend a week there watching the world go by. It is a fascinating place.
Well, unless you've been there, you can't really understand what it's like, can you? I used to describe it when you get off the plane. It's like opening the oven door on a Sunday dinner. It's like the heat, the smell, just hits you immediately.
That'll go down very well with Beijing, you know, Hong Kong. It's like opening up the oven door on a Sunday dinner. Ni hai, or ni hao.
Yes.
Arthur, it's been splendid as ever connecting with your good self. So I'm going to ask Stephanie to throw those last two questions at you. Off you go, Stephanie.
Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today?
Yes, I hope it has been interesting for you as well.
Definitely. We'll be able to speak to you again soon.
Yes, hopefully.
Yes, Arthur McKenzie will be back sorting through. Already on the show, we've had the Crufts International Jog Show from the NES Centre in Birmingham. We've spoken to Minty Steed. We've connected with the Lincoln Choral Society. Coming up, we have Equine Gymnastics with Rebecca Townsend, our former Legs & Co dancer Rosemary Langhorne, and indeed tutor and indeed member of Guys & Dolls. And William Sitwell with Food & Drink is also going to wrap up the whole sort of sequence. No sign of Hannah O'Brien, though, I noticed, Ed.
Apparently not. I'm not getting vibes she's on her way either.
No, sends the text in saying she will be here. I don't know. Arthur McKenzie, we salute you. The must-see movie this year. Well, after Hansel and Gretel, Witch Hunter, obviously. Harrigan, there we are. That's our routine for that. And, of course, Jack the Giant Slayer. We like to support all our team. Arthur, take care. We salute you. We'll see you again very soon.
Latest news and sport on Siren 107.3 FM, Lincoln's first community radio.